there is much too much ideology, not enough practical progress.
People are angry, and they are frustrated that perhaps it hasn't been a fast enough change.
Even at a time of enormous national challenge, the people's business is not getting done.
I don't want you to feel discouraged.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Well, a new CNN poll finds that 86% of Americans think that government is broken. With so much anger over the state of politics right now, both inside and outside the Beltway in Washington, we're launching a series this week we're calling Frustration Nation. We want to examine the gridlock in Congress and in Washington and the state of disenchantment among the electorate. Last week, longtime Democratic Senator Evan Bayh announced he would not be running for re-election because, well, frankly, he's one of those 87%.
For some time, I've had a growing conviction that Congress is not operating as it should. There is much too much partisanship and not enough progress. Too much narrow ideology and not enough practical problem solving.
Well, that was interesting coming from Evan Bayh because he's not only a two-term senator himself, but his father was a senator. So he has seen how it works in his time. He saw how it worked when he was a boy in his father's time. And he says he's just about fed up, so much so that he doesn't want to work there anymore. Part of his reason anyway. Well, to kick off this series, we're joined today by Theda Skocpol. She's professor of government and sociology at Harvard University. And back with us, Julian Zelizer, a congressional historian at Princeton and author of Arsenal of Democracy, The Politics of National Security from World War II. To the War on Terror. Welcome, both of you.
Thanks.
Nice to be here.
Good morning, Theda. Let me start with you. So many people say this is as bad as they've seen it. Evan Bayh strongly implies and has said this is as bad as he's seen partisanship and gridlock. What do you think? As bad as it gets?
Of course, slavery, civil rights, those were issues on which we saw protracted minority obstruction. I think it is pretty bad now in that this is the first time we have seen a minority after an election that their party lost badly decide to obstruct virtually everything in the program of a popular president.
Go ahead. This is new. Julian, you say it's not so new that we've been around this merry-go-round before, that Washington is designed to move slowly.
Well, it's designed to move slowly, but we also reach periods where the system is kind of grinding to a halt, and presidents or congressional leaders start to feel great frustration, and it often leads to moments of reform. Again, the 1960s, ironically, when Lyndon Johnson can move legislation, is also one where a lot of this frustration is building up. But clearly, there are certain issues that are getting worse. The filibuster is one. Campaign finance reform is one. And a sort of scorched earth obstructionist policy by the Republicans is the final one.
How did we get here to scorched earth, Julian? Is it just a question of the ideas are so big? Let's take health care. The ideas are so big. There's so much money at stake that rather than let it pass, you have to get scorched earth. How do you think we got to this moment?
Well, part of it is kind of a incremental deterioration of the political battles between the two parties. And I do think, you know, there's a sense of seeing how far you can push these obstructionist mechanisms. And that's what we're seeing with the Republican Party. Part of it is just built up tension over the last two decades of pretty big partisan polarization. And it seems, again, that the parties keep taking this further and further. And the Republicans are clearly kind of greatly frustrated that the story didn't turn out the way they wanted with united control of government in the early part of the 21st century.
Now, Theda Skocpol from Harvard, one of the things that I hear from members of Congress about why their relationships are so bad, some of it's interpersonal. They don't spend time together anymore. They fly home every weekend. They don't have a drink together. They don't have dinner together. Do you think that's – how much of a role do you think that plays?
I think it plays a little role, but I actually think that the reason that the Republicans have turned to across-the-board obstructionism on everything, including the appointments to the president's administration, is because it works. It works in an era of 24-hour cable news where Americans just pick up sound bites. Most Americans have no idea that it takes 60 votes in the Senate to pass something. They think we voted for a party to try some new things, and nothing is happening. And remember, this is happening in a severe economic recession where millions of Americans have lost their jobs or are afraid of losing them and think that the only thing the parties can do together is bail out Wall Street.
Julian Zelzer, I'm curious. One analyst had said that what sets us apart from other historical eras of obstructionism is that the obstructionism is across the board. In other words, there's not just a proposal on standards to civil rights or integration or segregation, but that even very routine, what would normally be routine legislation, gets blocked on principle.
That's a fair comment, and you can see that in the filibuster, meaning we've had a filibuster or filibusters throughout much of the history of the Senate. We didn't have cloture rules until early 20th century, but the filibuster was reserved in much of the 20th century for high-profile issues. So for something like civil rights, the filibuster was employed, and now what you see is the threat of a filibuster is used on almost anything, small legislation, big legislation, and I do think that is a significant change, and it's a bigger story about kind of using obstruction everywhere, especially in the last few months, rather than just in some places.
Theda Scotchpole, if obstruction works in the modern age, whether it's media or in the jet age of Congress, and it's going to influence voters to throw the bums out, and in this case the bums are Democrats, what's the way out of this? How about a little bit of a roadmap here, how to end the obstruction? And the gridlock.
I'm not sure there is a way out of this. And if Democrats are thrown out because Republicans cynically used across-the-board obstruction, that will not produce the result that voters will want. One of the problems that can happen, and it's happened in some European systems with fragmented parties, is that everybody obstructs, and then you get everything ground to a halt. On the other hand, if Democrats get back in, we'll see a lot of pressure on them to cooperate with the tax cuts for the rich that the Republicans want to put through. And in fact, in the past, they have let those through with less than 60 votes.
Theda Scotchpole, professor of government and sociology at Harvard University, and Julian Zelizer, congressional historian at Princeton University and author, joining us to talk about obstruction in Congress. You know, I had an interesting conversation with conservative Republican Congressman Jeff Fortenberry from Nebraska about why he thinks relations are dysfunctional between him and his colleagues. He's got an interesting take, so listen to it at thetakeaway.org. It's up there right now. We'll be continuing the series all week on Frustration Nation. We want to hear what you think about gridlock in Washington. 8778-MY-TAKE, or you can post to the website at thetakeaway.org.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.